Oh, well, this may be why Jason's isn't recording right.
It's not plugged
it's
in.
Not plugged in.
I'll do it.
That's a really subtle way to have gotten rid of him out of the whole thing.
Like, hey,
you're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hey, bonjour, bienvenue, Dots, Lines, and Destinations. C'est l'épisode 163, je pense, peut-être quelque autre. And now I'm out of French. Welcome to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, live in Toulouse. Cheers, we're drinking
cheers.
Beer out in the patio behind the Radisson Blu at Toulouse Blagnac Airport.
A serious upgrade from last night's
motivation. Yeah, that was an interesting, the Ratelier.
There were horses involved.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah. But today was the first flight of the A330neo. Exciting times for Airbus. And I'm joined by Jason Rabinowitz and Jeremy. Are we using your last names? I don't know.
Sure.
Dwyer Lindgren, who were both here with me for the event. And we're going to talk a little A330 and a little general aviation dorkage, because that's what we do here.
It's been a lot of that going around recently, too.
Dorkage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is Dots, Lines, and Destinations. It's basically what we specialize in. First thoughts on the 330neo? Did we learn anything today?
It was quiet. As we learned later in the day, a hell of a lot quieter than the A330CO.
Yeah, I think that was, for me, also particularly special. It took off and it did its thing and it landed and it taxied by and it was making noises and it was fine. And then a couple hours later, a couple of 330CEOs took off and standing in the same places, it was noticeable how much louder the engines were.
Yeah, the Trent 7000's definitely got some serious improvements there, even if it's a little bit late.
Yeah. So that was interesting to me. Did we learn anything else today, though? I mean, it flies. That was pretty cool.
It flies. That's the chief concern that they were looking to address, and yes, indeed it does. And lands.
Yeah, landed, too. That was true. I'm sure when it was up in altitude, it did a bunch of other stuff, like, you know, turned and flapped and fluttered and whatnot.
Airbus really played this one down. There wasn't a big debrief afterward. They didn't talk about what they did and pushing flight envelopes and things like that. It was just, hey, we went up and flew it and had some fun. And
yeah, about a year ago, I think it was November, Thanksgiving actually, last year, they had the first flight of the A350-1000, and it was a much, much higher key event. The factories poured out, people from all over were going to see it, they had a debriefing after it. It was really a big event. This seemed extremely low key, like, here it is, it flies, get out.
In your case, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did get thrown out after trying to take a conference call from the media room.
I ended that call, so it worked out.
Oh, so you got moved along twice then.
I did, yeah. At the I forgot about that. At the end of the whole speeches that the flight crew did, that congratulating themselves, saying, yay, the plane flies, we went out to the flight line to get a picture of it, and a security guy goes, no, you have to go right now.
You guys did wait a bit for that. Yeah. They had the tug hooked up there trying to pull it away.
So. Right, but that's when we want to get the shot, when they pull the air stairs back and you get a clean shot of the aircraft, and they were not having it.
Well, you could have fought with the security guard. That usually works well at airports.
I don't recommend fighting against corporate security.
You'll lose. Airport security or most any security.
You'll lose.
Every time.
Pretty much. So, 330neo seems to be working. Cool plane. To me, two interesting things also. One, there's going to be a heavier version.
Yeah, this is the 242-ton version that they have, the same for the CEO, and they're bumping it up in due course.
Yeah, 251 by the end of the decade or something like that,
yeah.
Which theoretically has increased range, which is bizarre to me because I just don't understand who's calling for higher range on this type. I feel like they would have been better to have actually really developed the 350-800 and gone with a regional 330 instead of like and a super cheap regional 330. And I actually asked that question during the press conference. They said they could do this as a regional version. Basically, it's a matter of adding and removing fuel tanks inside, and those weigh something. So taking them out lightens the load, and it increases the cost efficiencies of the aircraft if you're never going to use it for something longer. But they also really focused on sort of this one aircraft can do everything, and even with the extra tanks installed for the normal range, it's still reasonably cheap.
Who has even purchased the 330 regional at this point besides Saudia? That's the only airline I know that even has it or ordered it. So is there really a market demand for a regional variant that isn't already being fulfilled?
I feel like there should be.
But there clearly isn't.
Well, you know, I get things wrong sometimes, I guess. No, to me, the reason I feel that way is, and I know the 350s are larger, and that's why I feel like the 350-800 would have been a nice sort of middle ground here. It seems strange to me that there isn't a 4,000-mile aircraft anymore. No one makes a 4,000-mile wide body. And there are a lot of 4,000-mile markets. I mean, that gets you some of the short transatlantics from the East Coast. It doesn't quite get you the transpacifics from the West Coast.
But so what do you want, a 7.62 revival?
But actually efficient. 7.64.
Yeah.
Basically. But that's may have been too big. I don't know. I just feel like there's enough different markets. The transatlantic market particularly, and even some of the Europe to Asia stuff, I feel like could have benefited from that 8-hour flight range instead of the 14-hour flight range.
Well, there's still time. It went, 20 years before Airbus modified the 330 to be a regional variant? So,
yeah,
give or take 20 years, maybe we'll have a A330neo regional.
I mean, they thought it was dead a bunch of times.
Yeah. So check back in 2027.
That'd be 10 years.
2037.
Jason's good at math.
Yeah, math is tricky.
Is that even math? I think that's just arithmetic.
It's been a long couple of weeks. Leave me alone.
Hasn't it?
It has been a long couple of weeks. So, Jeremy, you're still in Europe.
Yeah.
Jason, you're back in Europe.
I am.
And for the record, I'm going to be back in Europe like 2 days from now.
None of this is normal.
Pretty ridiculous.
Nobody should be doing this.
I'm probably the closest to normal of any of us with two trips in the same week. But you guys were hanging out, abgeeking out earlier, I guess, last week?
Yeah, last week.
Yeah.
Was it just this past Monday, Tuesday, or was it a week ago,
It was a week ago. Today is Thursday, so yeah.
Week and a half.
Ten days ago.
Okay. They're not that crazy, just mostly crazy. So you guys came over here to do some flying and pick up specific aircraft types. What'd you hit and what'd you love?
Well, I talked Jason. I had to be over here anyway. My wife was finishing up her doctorate, which she did over in Europe. Super proud of her. She crushed it.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
That explains why you posted those pictures so early in the day.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why she was getting hooded at like 3 a.m. in Seattle.
Yeah, no, it was...
that was very confusing to me.
Yeah, no, it was...
She went to night PhD school?
It was Erasmus University, which is in Rotterdam.
Okay.
It was in public health, small area estimation.
It's all so much clearer.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, could not be more proud. But so she had to prep for a day before that and took some meetings. So I figured, well, that's my opportunity to get out and
go do
have
something
some fun.
Stupid.
Go do something stupid. And what person better to do something stupid with who's easily convincible than Jason? So I thought
True
I want to knock off the C series.
Okay.
Because why not? And then wanted to knock off the RJ85 Jumbolina before they were gone for good. And as we know, there's been a retirement ceremony almost on a biweekly basis of that type lately. And this was the last bastion for them. So it was fun.
It was pretty great. And along the way, the day started going Amsterdam to Zurich, and we were there for about 6 hours. And for that entire 6-hour period, the Zurich people hooked us up with like a phenomenal tour of the airport. Pretty much anything we wanted to see or do, including like, let's go walk around on the ramp and like wave to the Emirates A380 pilots. Like, okay.
That's nice.
They have a lot of publicly available tours. They have a really, really awesome...
Yeah, they have really super optimized
I'm not even
tours.
Sure you could call it a spotting deck, but it's like a family observation deck. They have all sorts of cool high-tech stuff up there, also like a bouncy castle, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and
You can bouncy castle and watch planes at the same time?
You sure can.
It's amazing.
You can see the planes from inside the bouncy castle?
Oh, yeah.
You think you've watched airplanes, and then you do it from a bouncy house.
That really is amazing.
It really is.
I might need to reroute my ticket.
Well, what was incredible is there were a bunch of things that really stuck out about that observation deck. A, I think Jason was pointing out, it's not necessarily just a deck. It's a destination.
Yeah.
Is it outside security or inside security?
It's its own thing. So in order to keep the glass...
If I'm in transit, can I get to it or do I have to clear immigration?
I believe you have to clear immigration.
Okay, so we'll call it outside-ish security.
Right. I think they offer the tours for people transiting. You have to have a minimum connection time of like 4 hours.
And you need to give them a couple weeks heads up, I believe.
Okay.
But they'll pretty much do whatever you want. A friend of mine took it not even a week after we were there.
Hmm.
But a couple things stuck out about that deck. That you could just show up to it. That's pretty sweet.
Five francs, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
They incorporated a ton of interesting technology into it. I think the one that really caught me was you go to a lot of these spotting decks or attractions or whatever, and you'll have those gigantic
binocular
things, and they're made with cheap glass and cheap optics, and you get a decent view, but you're not getting much. This, they did an augmented reality, digital zoom, high-definition glass. You zoom in on something, you can get, I think we were looking at an Icelandair 757, and a little button pops up, little icon pops up under it, and you zoom on the icon, and it will show
Are you, like, face against like binoculars thing doing this, or is it just a big touchscreen?
It's the same case that you would. It looks like one of these binocular things, and they didn't do a great job of marketing it as like, hey, this is actually a really cool piece of tech. But you put your face, you put your face up to it. You look at an LCD screen. You have a couple trigger buttons on either hand. You can zoom in. You can click for more info, and it runs off of their ground radar detection system. So any aircraft that's on the ground, you get the info from. It has markers for points of interest, like this is the catering facility, this is the ATC tower, this is the whatever, the baggage cart driving around. And it's
like it recognizes baggage carts?
I think it, well,
oh, and even the driver, planes. His name was Jeff.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Probably not in Switzerland.
No, but in a lot of European...
nice try, though.
Buddy. In a lot of European airports, the tugs, they all have ADS-B, and they're actually rigged up to transmit their location. But it was super cool. The flying we did aside, Zurich was a lot of fun.
Yeah, they did it was a phenomenal tour, and we'll have some photos on USA Today November.
I hear an airplane. What is it?
I don't hear anything.
I don't hear anything either.
Must be a Neo of some sort. Mm.
No, yeah. None of those have engines.
Oh.
Jason's currently checking.
I mean, should we talk about the elephant in the room? Because we were kind of stuck in traffic in it for a while.
Yeah, there's a lot of 320 Neos without engines on the field here in Toulouse.
A real lot. They're more than the terrible teens that were sitting around at Boeing Field. That's their equivalent there.
Those, I mean, the 78s were bigger and more imposing to the point where they had to close an entire runway. At least here they have the space to just throw them in like a piece of grass. But there are...
That's a lot of pieces of grass covered.
Dozens, potentially?
Yeah.
Dozens?
And there's also a bunch in Fink Converter in Lomberg.
There are potentially dozens of A320 Neos scattered throughout Airbus properties with no engines.
Yeah, that's awkward.
A little bit.
Anyway, back to Zurich.
And the other thing was I thought it was interesting was that they're the second most visited attraction in Zurich.
In Zurich, yeah. The whole city. They're the second most.
Seth is giving a look right now. I know, listeners, you can't see it, but, like, it's the look that you would expect. Like,
wait, what?
How is an airport? That's it, right there. How is an airport the second most visited attraction?
We were there
in
on a random.
One that's better is the zoo,
and which is also weird to me because I feel like zoos aren't a thing anymore. And I know that's terrible for you because you work at one, but
the ones who do it well are.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a weird. So they're saying like the spotting deck is the second most visited attraction.
We were there on a random Monday afternoon, and it was packed.
It was packed.
Was it people flying that day?
No, it was like families and like children.
No one had suitcases with them. They were
just
hanging out.
No, just people.
You would even expect that it would be like smothered with spotters.
No. We were the outcasts there.
Yeah, spotters, because you have to pay to get in. Spotters ain't going to do that.
Exactly.
That's true.
Which is cool, because, I mean, you know, you still get access and whatnot if you're willing to pay for it. But yeah, that sounds amazing. And it actually leaves me a little disappointed because I overnighted in Zurich a couple weeks ago, and it was truly an overnight. I landed late and departed early, so I didn't even... I think I saw a sign for it, but never actually went up. But that leaves me a little disappointed that I missed it.
Yeah, you got to do it sometime. Some of the interpretive elements that they bring in are really nice. Those augmented reality binoculars.
This sounds like legit, like, augmented reality making... Mm-hmm.
They converted...
That sort of thing work.
They have these large signs that are above the boarding gates that are flank the spotting deck that tell you what airline that plane is, what route it is, characteristics about the aircraft, which is pretty cool. So it's dynamic, whatever plane is there, it shows you. And they converted two of the jet bridges to actually let you walk along the roof of it down to the top of the aircraft, which is bizarre and awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And none of it has, like, high glass or, like, barbed wire or a guard with, like, a gun pointing at you or anything. It's just, like, waist-high railing.
And that was partly why they added the securities, because they didn't want to inhibit that experience.
So by making you go through a security check, they can leave the rails down and more open visuals,
or just experience. You don't feel that detachment. And one of the things that excites you about aviation is the smell, the sound, and you feel a little bit divorced from that if you're having to put your hand up against a glass. And they don't have that. It's like the old spotting decks, or not even spotting decks, but you know, kind of farewell decks that you would see from airports maybe 20, 30 years ago, where you could just walk up onto the roof and.
And wave.
It was an afternoon.
Yeah.
They have
sort of still remember bits of that.
They have a very weird runway configuration there, so it gets a little weird when you're waiting for aircraft to take off and there's a line of 10 or 15 aircraft and nothing's moving. What was the reason they gave that if an aircraft is on final for another runway, they can't have anyone take off on the active departure runway?
Yeah.
Good commentary.
If there's an aircraft on final, you can't take off?
So they have two runways that don't intersect, but their ends are very close.
So if you have to do a missed approach, there's no problem.
And you'll have a string of 2, 3, 4, 5 approaches, and during that time, you'll have a line of a dozen aircraft that just sit there.
Not exaggerating.
I mean, that's a matter of sequencing and their timing, but that sounds a little bit, excuse me, a little bit like how London City works, or any other single runway, even though this is a twin. But you guys
have three runways.
But part of your experience on this trip was you did a in and out at London City, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we started our day in, actually, Rotterdam, took the train to Amsterdam.
That thing tops out 186.
Yeah, that thing was fast. Unless it's not running at all when you need it.
305 kilometers.
Wow, that's fast for an intercity service.
Yeah, well, we paid the €2 extra to take the fast train. Mm-hmm. Rotterdam to...
Teach Amtrak how to work?
Yeah. Rotterdam to Amsterdam. Amsterdam to Zurich on a Swiss A320 in business class.
Oh, fancy you.
Well, it was cheaper than economy. Because reasons and airlines.
Yeah, yield management.
And Orbitz weirdly working all of a sudden. I haven't booked a fare in Orbitz in years. And suddenly Orbitz came out of the blue to offer me a fare cheaper than economy. And Jason found it natively, but I couldn't.
Anyway, we were there. We were in Zurich for 6 hours. Then we took the CS100 to London City, which was very, very awesome. Again, business class. Very, very la-di-da.
That helped.
We got a... I didn't like the meal. The meal was weird.
I liked it, but...
Is it fancy food? You don't like fancy food, I know that.
It was like paste. It was like vegetable paste. I wanted the meal from economy. They got a sandwich with bread.
You noted that multiple times during the flight.
I wanted the bread.
I want my turkey sandwich. Why did they get a turkey sandwich?
Why don't I get a turkey puck?
I will say that all three flights we took
You haven't finished that.
In London City. We connected. Like, nobody connects in London City. You can't even do that, so you have to clear immigration.
The immigration guy looked at me and said, 1 hour? Yeah, transfer.
So we both wrote on the immigration card, duration of stay, 0. I just wrote 0 on it. But
I did that in Australia once. They were similarly unimpressed.
Yeah, the PR person at London City follows me on Twitter, so he met us with a sign with my name on it and escorted us through FastPass security, which didn't take all that long at all, and then escorted us right to our gate where it was boarding already. So nobody connects at London City, but...
Weird to me that that's like the business airport and all these things and doesn't have a lounge.
Yeah, well, it
doesn't much of anything. They also have one of the restaurants sells a like sliced pastrami sandwich that was actually pretty good, but they sell it on something they call a bagel.
That's not good.
And I gotta say, as someone who has grown up with bagels and had bagels in many countries around the world, I find that insulting.
Yeah.
Because this was not a bagel.
Well, the boarding gates are basically, it's a long hallway with jet bridges. But they've redone it a bit. They're nice. They have power outlets.
That's a typical thing for London airports, though.
Yeah,
like,
a hallway with jet bridges.
Sit in the mall part, and then we'll let you know when you're allowed to leave to finally go to your gate and get on an airplane.
Yeah.
I've gotten in trouble wandering multiple times at Heathrow.
Yeah. Have you ever gone out to, like, one of the piers and then not been able to get back?
No, I just get kicked out and brought back.
Oh, nice. Escorted?
Yep.
Very
anyway,
nice. Yeah,
so
you board from the ground, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's right. There's no jet bridges. It's just an awkward stairway, and then you just walk straight into the plane. Yeah. Unless you're in one of the gates where they make you take a bus 45 feet. Which did...
No, we walked off the jet in on the CS-100. We walked off and got onto a bus, which took us about 45 feet.
100 yards, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But then the RJ, we walked right out to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's a gorgeous sight that you're just not going to see anymore. What the hell was the business case for the RJ85 or the BA?
They needed a regional jet to operate in short runway conditions, and
yeah, I guess
two-engine aircraft just didn't cut it back then.
Fair enough.
Theoretically, the four-engine aircraft are quieter, also, right? Because each engine generates less thrust.
The RJ85 was dubbed like the Whisper Jet back in the day. Yeah. Certainly now, it's a howler jet. I guess it's loud compared to the CS.
As someone who's collected a lot of old stuff at this time. Almost every single jet when it first came out, the 727 was
the
Whisper Liner.
Jet. Yeah.
Depending on the airline, Whisper Jet, Whisper Liner. Almost all of them had that. So it's not necessarily novel, but yeah, it's definitely not that way anymore.
No, so CityJet has it configured in a 3-3 layout when it's supposed to be 2-3.
This is CityJet for KLM?
CityJet for KLM, which I think is already done. It was only a short-term thing, but it's extremely cramped, and I'm an idiot who picked a windowless window seat with an AC duct in that sidewall. So I was sitting with, like, shoulders tucked in, and I'm like, no, this is not going to work. And
you did look uncomfortable.
It was awful.
So more of the story is you're an idiot, though, right?
Of course.
Absolutely.
But the back half of the aircraft was completely empty, so I ended up winning by going to the very back and getting two whole rows to myself.
Wow, there you go.
I should have followed you.
You should have followed me because it was nice back there.
Did you have someone sitting in the middle next to you?
Oh, yeah, I had a completely full row. The only completely full row that I could see.
Nice. How comfortable was that?
Not extremely, but whatever. It's a 45-minute flight.
Yeah. But I've done that Avro as well. It's a tight squeeze.
Out of London City, though, it's a fun ride. Because
yes,
they get up to the... You line up on the runway. They turn the parking brake on. They gun the engines. Then you sit there for about 5 seconds while they spool up the engines. They release the brakes, and it's like kind of a roller coaster where you're thrown back in your seat, and the thing just goes whoosh, and it goes.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've experienced that in a commercial aircraft before. And when that thing lifts off the ground, it just goes whoosh, straight up.
It's been a long time since I've done a takeoff like that in a commercial jet, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I have to imagine on that particular jet, it's even a little different. I've done Embraer out of City a couple times now,
mm-hmm.
and it's fun. But it's not quite that sporty, let's say.
No.
This is coming from a guy who at the moment has a fear of flying that has just reappeared out of nowhere.
Does it have anything to do with perhaps taking off on a tiny, old, shitty plane out of London City Airport?
No. That was fun. That was really fun. I don't know where the heck it came from and why the heck it came. Well, I didn't. I had it when I was younger. But anyway, I don't know why I came back. Departures have generally not been pleasant for me lately, but that was just a blast.
So maybe you should make that request to the pilots before every flight. Like, can you just gun the engines on the runway for a few seconds and then let the brakes go, just so it's fun?
Yeah.
Not routine.
Awesome. Or move to Southern California and fly out of Burbank and Santa Ana all the time.
That's true. Same thing. We made a hard turn at about 3,000 feet to avoid the city, which is standard. But... And I was almost upset because I had the left side of the airplane. Jason got onto the right.
Oh, yeah.
And I was expecting him to get a really good view of London. I haven't done the departure before. I know the both of you have done it a couple of times.
Right side, best side.
And I knew that I thought the right side was going to be best, but then we made a hard left turn. And the city was just right there, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah. I feel like the left side gets you better views in that when the plane turns, you're looking down, but you're on the south side of the Thames still. So it's not... true city center and all the good stuff.
No, it wasn't city center.
Oh, no, I got the full city center. You could see the Shard, you could see everything. Straight up the row.
I may have been asleep the last couple times I left London, unfortunately.
Must be nice.
To sleep on airplanes?
Don't forget Paris.
Yeah,
apparently when we flew from Paris to Toulouse yesterday, there were great views of downtown.
Spectacular views.
I was asleep from before departure until roughly when the wheels hit the ground. It was great. I feel like that was more spectacular than seeing Paris from the air.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're tired, that's only happened to me a couple times. I remember taking off from Los Angeles one time after a 44-hour itinerary.
Yeah.
And I remember we turned onto the runway, and then I remember landing in Seattle, and that was it.
Yeah.
But I had a really nice arrival into Paris this morning. I've never seen the city like that. We came in on an arrival. I haven't checked the runway, but we were coming in right over the city. We passed maybe 1,000 feet over Le Bourget. In fact, I've never done that departure, or sorry, that arrival before.
It sounds like the reverse of our departure yesterday.
Right, yeah. And it was so low that I was getting a little worried. Concerned. Like, this seems so out of the ordinary.
Huh.
When Seth and I flew over here on the Air France A380 on Tuesday,
Tuesday
we were over farmland the whole way.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm used to.
Yeah.
So suddenly seeing the city at 3,000, 4,000 feet was just a little bit alarming.
And you were coming from Germany?
Munich, yeah. Munich,
so that's a loop around.
It makes sense completely.
Add 7 minutes to your flight time, but kind of worth it for the views.
Oh, absolutely. I was super happy to see it, and you got a great view of the tower and the city.
The one other time I can remember falling asleep before departure, I was coming home from Minneapolis in the winter, going back to New York, and the piles of snow on the sides of the runway were massive, just like huge piles, and it was gray because it had picked up the dirt and whatnot from the exhaust of the airplanes.
50% asphalt, 50% snow.
Yeah, and it was this gray, and I looked out the, and then I woke up and I looked out the window, and it was still gray. It's like, and I acknowledged that I had fallen asleep. I'm like, wow, we're still on the ground. This stinks. And then I realized we actually were at cruise altitude in clouds.
Somewhat similar.
Because but like I never felt the departure roll.
The snow came from the clouds.
I never felt the takeoff, and so my body was like, you haven't accelerated. You're just still in the same place you were. It's the same sort of nominal vibrations of the engines, and it was a very disorienting moment.
But it's like the time I was dreaming about, feel free to edit this out, I was on a Ethiopian flight.
You think we edit this?
From, whatever, from D.C. to Ethiopia, and makes sense, because we're on Ethiopian. Anyway, and I was dreaming, I had a dream that the flight was going down for some reason, which is obviously never a great thing.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I was still on an airplane and we were making a turn and exactly, oh man, that was not a great moment. That's before the fear of flying
manifested. Is that about when the fear of flying came back?
No. That was seven years ago.
Oh, wow.
And that was a pretty good moment. That only came back a year ago.
Okay. Well, we'll find a way to get you out of that. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's more of the spear. But we'll get you there.
This spear is not bad.
We have a plan for this evening.
We have a plan for this evening.
We have a plan that has been in the works for 11 months. This is what I've planned for the longest time, more than anything else in my life at this point.
I mean, let's be honest. This wasn't about, you know...
No, the A330neo is just a reason to get to Toulouse.
So that we could...
get that meat and cheese plate that we've been talking about like idiots for 11 months.
Yeah, and Seth already called us on it, and he's probably right. To fill people in. We've been dying over this meat and cheese plate that we had last year in Toulouse during the A350-1000 flight, and it was, in our recollection, basically phenomenal.
We had three people that had it, and we all thought it was phenomenal, so we can't all be delusional.
No, we can't.
You were all drunk, though.
No.
Wait, hang on a second. The version of the story I've heard is that, like, we walked into a bar, and it was full, and so we wandered into another bar, and it was full, and then we walked in this other place, and none of us could find it again, and Jason had to go back and search through, like, a year of tweets to find a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, hang on. And last night... when we were walking around,
wrong yet.
When we're walking around the neighborhood, where he's like, it's in this neighborhood. And we told our taxi driver, and we gave him a road name. He's like, oh, this spot.
I was wondering if you were going to narrow it down to like a 1 square mile area.
It's like a 1 block radius. But we give the taxi driver the avenue, and he's like, oh, this bar. And Jason's like, yeah, I think that's the one we tried to go to that we couldn't find seats in, and we didn't end up there. I was like, whatever. So we
George and
the
Dragon.
That was George plan too.
The George and the Dragon. Okay. So we drive to this bar. The guy's like, yeah, and it's, mind you, also like you've heard my awful French so far on this episode, but between the French and the English and whatever, it was a little challenging. We get there, we start wandering around. Jason actually pulls out the photos of the place and holds them up on a table. It's like, oh, yeah, the wood grain and the finish matches this table.
Because there,
like,
was very little to go by in the photo.
He didn't geotag it. There's no menu. There's nothing. We actually, and he was right. I mean, in his defense, he got it right. The wood grain matched. It was the correct restaurant.
Now we know where to go today.
And now we know where to go, and we actually know the name of the place. I suppose we should tell our listeners what it is so they can find it.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a thing?
Let me get that
real quick. I can find it on Instagram, too, while we're talking. But, yeah, you were La Fabrique.
Is that it?
LaFabrique.
Well, for the longest time, it was automatically tagged in my Google Maps because, you know, Google's creepy and it automatically highlights places you've been before. And I guess at some point it stopped doing that because I hadn't been back. And I was very disappointed when it just disappeared off my map.
It removes things we haven't been. Anyway, my point of this whole thing is when you're really, really drunk and a plate of meat and cheese shows up in front of your face, I think it's probably the best plate of meat and cheese you've ever had.
We were not drunk. We were drinking, but we were not drunk.
We will.
I believe you weren't drunk. We will judge again this evening.
We will, and I'm a little nervous that you may prove right.
I hope.
However,
I'm willing to be wrong on this one because I love a good meat and cheese plate.
Oh man, it's
we
so
also
good.
Had a burger for some reason, and it was way too much.
I think we got the meat and cheese plate, and we thought, no, we should have stopped here.
Most people call that dinner, by the way, a burger.
We didn't eat it.
Didn't eat it
after the meat and cheese plate. It was too much.
No, I think tonight I am ordering a meat and cheese plate, and it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sharing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There will be no sharing.
I can't share that with anyone. I want to eat the whole thing.
Like, interesting. Regardless of how this goes, it will be awesome.
So we'll be the three American idiots coming in there ordering three meat and cheese plates that are supposed to be shared by a dozen people.
And a lot of beer.
Ooh, yeah.
So we're saying it's going to be a good night.
Yes.
But
the kitchen does not open until 7:30. We know that now.
Seven.
Even better.
If we leave now, we still get there a little early. How far is it from the tram station to the restaurant?
It's a walk.
It's not short.
Yeah, it's not. That's the weird part of how we ended up
there. We literally stumbled onto it.
We took the tram and the subway into downtown Toulouse, and we didn't know where to go, and a bunch of things didn't look great. They were kind of closed. So we ended up walking
probably very close, a
good 10 minutes away from the nearest metro or tram station.
Oh, what a haul.
Yeah, it was. I mean, at the end of a long day, it was kind of a haul. We were like, I want to get in the place now.
Well, it's kind of the end of a long day, and we were drinking already. So
right, but now we know where to go.
We weren't drinking already. We never actually got anything.
We are right now.
We totally are right now. Yeah.
You said last time you never actually drank.
Until we got there.
Okay.
You know, never mind.
I'm sure it will be fine.
This podcast is getting more and more incoherent.
It's also becoming less and less about airplanes.
Well, dots, lines, and destinations. This is the destination.
Right,
part.
Right. Destination. Well, this.
Well,
we covered
the dots and lines with our round trip in Europe on weird airplanes. We got the lines.
So here's my question. I just want to go back to your little travel adventure.
Yeah, please.
Why no Brussels Airlines, CityJet, SSJ?
I wanted to.
Couldn't make it work.
Exactly. The time schedules, and I spent a lot of time on this because I wanted to get as much as I could. And I had one day. So I tried real hard, but the schedules just didn't match up without either costing a fortune or without just really messing you up time-wise. Right. But it was too bad.
All of this on the cheap, too. None of this was expensive.
Yeah, I mean,
it was maybe $300.
That's not bad, including business costs on Swiss. Nice.
Which came really handy with the lounge in Zurich right before we got out of there. I got to take a shower, which was just phenomenal.
Nice. Is that, and the Zurich Swiss Business Lounge, that's the longest bar in Europe or something?
No, main Zurich lounge is being renovated. So we had to go to the Schengen area, and it was over capacity, very crowded, but there was a shower, and I was very happy.
It was absolutely worth it, though.
Yeah.
And at least as far as Euro business class, if there's one that I could say might be worth the money, it might be Swiss.
Yeah.
Because that catering quality was way better.
But remember, all three flights that we were on, people in economy, they got something that resembled a meal, even on 45-minute flights. On the CityJet RJ85, we were in economy. I got like a decent little veggie wrap, which was actually really...
It was pretty good.
It was good quality, like a cream cheese carrot wrap. It was good.
And I've thought the same...
I know.
Cream cheese carrot wrap, and it was good?
It was good.
Yeah.
What do you want from me?
I mean, I thought the
better
same thing with
KLM. Better taste, apparently.
Wow.
Wow. All right.
It's going to be like that, huh?
I've thought KLM's short-haul things were pretty good. My wife and I both tried it. We flew from Amsterdam, Munich last week, and it was a little bit bizarre, but it was fine.
So this year on KLM, I've flown, I guess KLM and Swiss, I've flown the C-Series, I've flown the RJ85, I've flown the F-70.
Fucker.
Running out of weirdo aircraft to fly before they're all gone and everything turns into an A320 or something.
So how many are there left of weirdo aircraft?
But you also, Jason, I mean this is a nice moment, but you're also still like hunting the 764.
I will get that later.
You say that now, but there's only like 40 of them or 50 of them out there.
I haven't gotten either.
It's weird for me because I'm a continental guy by nature. Like I grew up.
So that's pretty easy to grab.
I live in New York City and I flew continental for so long. Like 764 is a mainstay for me.
Right.
And so it's weird for me to hear people like, no, really? Wow.
To see it at all in Seattle is pretty unusual.
That's
United occasionally brings it in.
That seems like a charter for the Seahawks or something to me. But
No, those come into Boeing Field.
Oh.
And they're a Delta.
Fair.
Keep climbing. Anyway.
Wow. When do you cash your paycheck?
The zoo does that for me.
Anyways.
I'm missing the SSJ.
I tried real hard to find a way to work that in.
Or one of the Chinese aircraft that are impossible to book.
So, speaking of, I think I finally have a line on the ARJ21.
Nice.
I'm going to be in Chengdu.
All one that's in commercial
service. There's one in service. There's two.
Well, Chengdu, only one's ever scheduled to fly.
Chengdu Airlines owns two of them. They sometimes put tickets on sale roughly 30 days in advance of travel. So I've literally been holding out. I'm going less than a month. I'm going to China. And I'm going to be in Chengdu, and I need to fly to Shanghai, and I think we'll get there. I think I'll finally get to fly on this plane. I have to just pick, like, which random route I want to choose and then take a train from there to where I'm actually going. But I think I'll actually get there. So I'm really excited by the opportunity to fly the ARJ21. I almost tried to do it a year ago when I was going to be there, and it clearly didn't actually fly the day I was supposed to be in China, so I'm glad I ended up not going to China for that trip. But I think I might get the ARJ this trip.
Awesome.
So that's a random, like, real random, may never... Like, there may never actually be more made. Are they still trying to make that thing?
They say they're going to ramp up the line. Like, they're idiots
for doing so. It's been 2 years
nobody's
going to
want this thing. They're all going to want the larger, newer, better version of it, which is the
C-19?
The C-19.
The
bigger, better
one. Yeah, but the 919 still has a long way to go.
Yeah, but the ARJ...
And those are basically two separate, completely separate products, which is something that's also underscored by Bombardier. You can make a smaller airplane, and you can do that well. COMAC has not quite accomplished that, obviously, with the ARJ21. But scaling up to a larger airplane, it's in a completely different beast. It's not fair to compare the two.
I don't know. At this point, I feel like it's a proven failure. It's been years.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
Haven't ramped up. Nobody's ordering it. They're still flying one frame. And they have
two.
One and a half.
At one point, they actually had it on their schedule with which tail you'd fly.
Well, like they have these delusions that they're going to ramp up to build, like, I'm not going to quote the number, but like multiple dozen a year, and that's delusional.
Yeah.
Even Chengdu Airlines, the one airline that operates, it says when, after they flew it for a couple of months, they're like, there's so many problems with this thing. It's noisy.
I can't wait to get avionics issues.
But that's the fun of it, right?
Avionics issues. Actually, noisy I can handle. Avionics issues, I'm a little sketchy about.
Would I fly it? Oh, yeah, totally.
Just once.
Yeah, once, just to get out of the way.
Anywho. All right. We've been talking for a while now.
Let's wrap this up by how are we all getting home?
I am flying Toulouse to Orly to JFK, and I chose that specifically because this Orly JFK flight now exists on Air France, and I think that's going to be fun.
See, I wanted to get some more dots lines in your podcast.
I appreciate that. How are you getting home, Jason?
I am flying KLM by Amsterdam once again. Hello, Amsterdam again. E175 to Amsterdam, and then the new KLM 789 back to JFK in new world business class.
Ooh. New is a relative term.
Well, they call it new world business class.
I'm just meaning calling the 787 new. It's a year old now, isn't it?
It is, but it's their actual, like, good new business class with reverse herringbone as opposed to 222.
Yeah, you don't like the diamond seat, huh?
No, not a fan. I mean, I like it, but I'd rather have direct aisle access. So who wouldn't?
Me sort of sometimes. Topic for another conversation.
Each their own.
Got a beer, but Jeremy, how are you getting home?
I am also taking KLM.
Different home though. You got to go all the way west coast.
Yeah, that's true. I'm KLM up to Amsterdam, and then I'm transferring to an A332 all the way to Seattle on Delta One.
Ooh.
Delta One's good.
I like them. And it's not the 76, so it's actually a decent product.
Yes, the 76 I really liked at first, and then it wore real thin, real fast.
Unless you get the bulkhead, in which case it's back to pretty decent.
I agree.
Yeah,
we've had that conversation here, though. You've all heard Stephen rant about that, so we won't bore you with that anymore.
No.
Thank you, guys. We need to go buy more beer somewhere else.
We know where. Not
we know exactly
else.
Where I
we
know
where
I
we're
got
going.
10 hours to sleep this off tomorrow, so let's
indeed,
do this.
Indeed. If someone wanted to find you online, where would they look?
You can find me at PhotoJDL, and that's the best place to find me. I'm not
Is that
super active
Twitter
like
and
these
the Instagrams?
Two.
Or just the Twitters?
I have a menial, and I stress menial presence on Instagram. I really should be more,
so
but I'm mostly through the Zoom.
Given that photo is part of your thing, I thought that Instagram would be more of your thing.
Yeah, right?
You would, but I don't really do it.
All right. Well, so the Twitter is PhotoJDL?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, me. That's my cue.
I'm pointing at you. That is, in fact, a cue.
I was looking at my beer. Mm-hmm. At Airline Flyer on Twitter, but also somewhat on Instagram and Facebook. And
wait a minute. You just said you're on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook.
Wow.
You never use Facebook.
It's there. I use it to lurk and stalk.
Okay,
but...
you're done. You're cut off.
Yeah.
you can follow Dots Lines at Dots Lines. We're moredotsmorelines.com. Thanks for listening to this ridiculous ramblings. Go A330neo. Go meat and cheese plates.
Yes.
And tomorrow we get to go home. Take care.